trust. It's the theme we're talking about this week. If you've got a Bible, grab it, open it at the beginning, the book of Genesis. Trust is one of the most valued traits in our human existence. Trust. It's one of the most significant ingredients in human relationship. You think about it. Think about your own life. Trust allows us to have good relationships with people. Trust allows community. Trust allows us to live in streets of people, move into a place that we don't even know, but we take up residence in this community because somewhere in us there's just this innate sense that I should be able to trust another human being. Trust is what allows us to engage in business with one another. Trust. Trust is what enables us to rest. It allows rest in us. It allows peace. Trust. But yet, I wonder if there's anyone here that has never, ever had their trust broken or challenged or violated at any level. How many of you in here would say, no, actually, I have had my trust broken. Someone who I trusted lied to me. Someone who I trusted stole from me. Someone who I trusted betrayed me. Someone who I trusted deceived me. If any level, minor to major, you've ever had trust broken, let me see your hand. Look around. Now keep it up if that happened within the context of your Christian story. In your faith journey with God, you've had that faith betrayed. You look at that and you realize this is part of our human experience. And I wish we were infallible as human beings. I wish we never let one another down. I wish that we could say, trust me and I'll never fail you. I'll never break my word. I'll never back out of something. I'll never renege. I wish. But we would pretty much all say, no, I'm sorry, the experience of humanity is different from that. Trust is always going to be tried. But the reality is, though our trust may have been broken, if we were honest, and I'm not going to ask us to put our hands up again, how many of us have violated another's trust at any level? And this story that we've been reading in these chapters in Genesis about a man named Joseph, man, I put myself in his situation and I wonder how I would have done. I wonder how any of us would have done. Because here you've got this young man who pretty much at every level of relationship throughout his journey, his trust was violated, and not just violated, but trashed, laid waste to. And I wonder if over that journey, Joseph becomes reluctant to trust others. He becomes resistant, but he always seems to begin to open himself up again and often just gets painfully broken again. As you go through his story in Genesis, he's a boy who grows up highly favored by his dad. And to the point that he's given like amazing gifts and he's been given this coat that just makes him stand out from anyone. And then one day when his brothers are all grazing their herds, dad goes, hey, go out and just check on the boys, see how they're doing, see if they're doing right. Go out. And Joseph goes out to them. And what has developed over the years, and I'm not going to take a long time, we've talked through some of it, is they just have this hatred for him. And as he turns up there, oblivious to it, they grab him. And they don't just rough him up and tell him, you know, it's time for him to, you know, pull his head in. They've already determined, we're going to kill him. They throw him into a well. They were actually going to murder him until one brother goes, hey, look, let's not murder him. Let's not shed blood. Let's just throw him down the well. And he had some plan to maybe come back and get him later. But if you should be able to trust anyone, you'd think it'd be your brothers and sisters, your family, your blood. But the reality is that doesn't always hold true. People even say you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your family. And that sort of comment is often born out of deep pain. But it's not just that. It's not just that they abandoned him. It's how they did it. And you actually don't hear it from Joseph's point of view, but in Genesis chapter 42, when this story is sort of culminating and now the brothers have come and they're in front of Joseph, and if you don't know the story, you'll just have to hang with me a minute. Reuben, one of the older brothers that abandons Joseph and agrees to sell him off into slavery, he says, don't you remember how he begged us, how he pleaded with us? And that takes you back to this moment where you just picture it, and they grab him, and Joseph's just like, what? No, don't do this. I'm your brother. They throw him down a well, drag him out, and he thinks it might be getting better. And then he realizes that there's a cash exchange going on. He's being sold to slave traders that are going to take him to a foreign land. And Reuben's the one who accounts to it and says, don't you remember the painful, tearful begging that he made of us not to do this? And we did it anyway? That's why we're getting this back in our lives. You see this thing that it was not just painful emotionally to him. He was betrayed, rejected, abandoned, sold to never see his family again is what his expectation would have been. He ends up in Egypt. And he's sold as a slave to a man named Potiphar. And the account of this man named Potiphar in Genesis 39 and onwards is this, that everything, not 39, it's before that, in everything was that Potiphar entrusted his entire house to him. There was nothing that he had to worry about while it was under Joseph's charge. And Joseph, I imagine, begins to sort of return to hope and return to trust and looks at this man and goes, well, maybe there is someone good that even though I'm his slave, he trusts me with everything. And then when Potiphar's wife begins to put herself on Joseph and he rejects her and says, there's no way I'm doing this. He has entrusted everything to me. Why would I sin against him and why would I sin against God and do this evil thing? But she conspires against him. And she has him arrested and thrown in prison by Potiphar's word because of this ruse that she sets up against him. And everything that Joseph has begun to restore in trust and hope is what? It's laid waste to in a minute again, and now he's in jail, unjustly, done nothing wrong to deserve it. In fact, did everything right. And here he is. But it says that God was with him in all of this, and he begins in this jail cell, and it's the deep jail cell. It's where Pharaoh's prisoners are kept, the ones that he doesn't want to see again. It's where Joseph's put. But it says in that time that the chief, the jail keeper, begins to see qualities in Joseph, and he makes him like in charge of other prisoners. And I wonder if Joseph at this point starts going, here we go again. I mean, it's looking good. But is it looking good just to have it laid waste again? I don't know if you've been offended against multiple times. If someone's ever violated your trust time and time again, don't you become weary with it? Don't you come to this point that you go, no. Actually, I'm not going to extend myself again. But here he is, ends up with two other prisoners that Pharaoh's got a beef with, and they get thrown in the prison. One's his cupbearer, one's his baker. And one morning he sees the men troubled, and Joseph's like, what's going on? They're like, well, we had these dreams and we don't even know what to do with them. And Joseph says, well, I know God can interpret dreams. And he interprets their dreams, and the account goes on, and it's in Genesis 40. And in Genesis 40, and if you got it there, have a look at it. In verse 13, he tells the cupbearer what will happen. In verse 14, he says, when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness and mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. Verse 15, he has obviously thought about his situation. In verse 15, he says, because I was forcibly carried off from the land of the Hebrews, and even here, I've done nothing to deserve being put in this dungeon. Joseph has thought about it a lot of times, and he's thought about the violation of his trust. And he says, this is unjust, I didn't deserve it, and I deserve to actually be out of here, so remember me to Pharaoh when the time comes. And what happens? The story goes on. The cupbearer is restored to his job in front of Pharaoh, and it says he forgot about Joseph, completely forgets about him. Not just for moments, not just for days, not months, not a year, two full years. I wonder if Joseph is getting a little numb to this by now. Think of yourself in that situation. Each of those things that you would go through, each of those things that you would face. I love the character of Eeyore in Winnie the Pooh. Now, you may not know Winnie the Pooh. Maybe it's beyond you. Maybe it's below your reading level. I love Winnie the Pooh. But I particularly love Eeyore. He's one of the most depressed donkeys in the entire world. And everything's always miserable. And everything's bad. And I sort of imagine the conversation, if it was me and, you know, Eeyore mindset sets in, these guys have the dream, it's like, well, you know, I know God has the interpretation of those dreams. And he gives them the interpretation, then goes, well, if you stand before Pharaoh, maybe you can remember me, but you probably won't. I mean, that's how I would already be feeling. Well, my brothers once said they loved me. Then I ticked them off. Then they threw me in a hole. Then they sold me to some Amalekite slave traders. And then I began to do well again in Potiphar's house, and his wife wrongly accused me, and then I got thrown in prison. Now here I am with you. Not much of a life really, is it? So actually, if you don't remember me, no biggie. This is kind of my life. I mean, that's how I think a lot of us would sort of be in that space. I don't know if a funk ever descends over you and messes with your thinking, but this sort of experience causes funks to descend on people's thinking. Like brain clouds that you're sort of lost in, that you can't see your way out of. But especially when they do forget you. And you're sort of there waiting by the door. Surely today, this morning, he's going to remember me to Pharaoh. Pharaoh's going to come and say, wow, I could use you. No. Next day, it doesn't happen. The few days that you wait there by the gate, it doesn't happen. And then you realize after a couple of weeks, well, it's like I expected. Months, years. What happens to your thinking? What happens when every time you think you're getting up, it all seems to be laid waste to again? The thing is that there are times that you don't understand, and you just got to wait. But the thing that I discover as I read Joseph, his faith in God's character never shifts. He has a right distrust in people. Okay, there is a right distrust in people where people keep betraying you, deceiving you, laying waste to your trust. There's a right place of going, this trust's going to take some time to be restored. But I love that first passage we memorized in the Bible that says this, those who know your name will trust in you. For you, Lord, have never forsaken those who seek. And you go, what? Hang on a second. Joseph, did you abandon him? Did you leave him? What we're led to believe in the Bible is that blessings follow obedience. And all I've ever seen of Joseph in this story is obedience. Is honoring you, but where's the blessing? And you can pick verses from the Bible that say that. You go to Proverbs 2, 21 and 22, and it says this, for the upright will live in the land, the blameless will remain in it, but the wicked will be cut off from the land and the unfaithful will be torn from it. The upright live in the land, blameless remain in it. Psalm 128, blessed are all who fear the Lord, who walk in His ways. You'll eat the fruit of your labor, blessing and prosperity will be yours. Blessing follows obedience. True. But how far behind? It just says it follows. It will come. When? I don't know. The bummer is there's never a time frame on it. And God's timing is not what you might like it to be. And the blessing that you might inherit may be nothing like that which you might expect. You see, we don't get to write the formula. We get to choose whether we're going to submit to God or not. And here's what happens. I want you to look through, and I'm going to skip my notes. I'll take too long. You realize that God says, I'm just going to keep you right where you are. Yeah, but this sucks right now. I've been abandoned to prison, left here to rot, forgotten by people who said they'd remember me, sent here by my brothers who are my blood, abandoned by a man who entrusted everything to me because of his deceiving wife, and here I am. You look at Joseph's story, and God seems to just say, not yet, wait, not yet. But it's getting worse, I know, but wait. Because I'm not finished yet, wait. And you start to go, but I'm sick of waiting. I don't want to wait anymore. I want to see the fruit of this. If something good's coming of it, let me see that. And God's going, wait, wait. And it's often there that people go, you know what? I'm done with waiting. I'm done. You're not faithful. You're not good. You've not been true to your word. But we don't have a just measure of that. If you're still breathing, it's not over. If you're still living, it's not over. God's not done working. It's hard to wait. In the world we live in, and our world just gets faster and faster pace, and what I find all the time, we're surrounded by this idea of instant gratification, and when it's not fast enough anymore, when it's not happening quickly enough anymore, what do? We abandon the old and get the new. We upgrade. And I know people that go through, it's time to upgrade God. Because the God that I used to serve, it's not working for me anymore. But God says this, I never change. I'm the same yesterday, today, and forever. My yes is yes, my no is no. There is no shadow of turning in me. I am faithful to my word. What I have said will be done. So we don't get to look at God and go, not working for me anymore. Because what you realize in that, if God never changed, then the change was me. And it's hard to realize that. Because in our world, we're saying, well, it should work like this. And God's sometimes going, no, it should work like this. Look at Joseph, Genesis 39:9. He knew the revelation of God's character. With Potiphar's wife, he says this, How can I possibly do this thing? How can I sleep with you? How can I give myself to you and do what? And sin against God. That's what he says in Genesis 39:9. How can I do this and sin against God? Well, you see, there are people who would argue that and go, well, if God doesn't come through for you, then why should you come through for God? If God gave you all these hopes and all these dreams that he gave Joseph as a little boy that he hadn't seen fulfilled, there are people who will say, God hasn't been faithful, so why should you remain faithful to him? Do what you like. But the problem then is that we have God on our time frame and we're measuring him against ourselves. Genesis 40, when it comes to interpreting the dreams in the prison for these two men, Joseph says what? Interpretations belong to God, and only God knows this. And that word interpretation means to lay open. And he says only dreams are only laid open by God. They're only led by God. And you look at that and go, wow, hang on. He's saying that when he had a dream as a little boy that people would bow to him and his parents would bow to him and his brothers would come and be humbled before him. And he's telling this other guy, actually trust in God's interpretation. That trust, he's the one who's going to lay it open, even though I haven't seen mine fulfilled yet. I haven't seen my fulfillment in life. I haven't seen any of that come through. But I tell you what, trust in God, because he's the one who will interpret it. That's when you trust character. When it hasn't yet happened for you, but you trust his word. He stands 2 years later, forgotten by everyone who said they would remember him, and he comes before Pharaoh, who's had a dream, and he says, Pharaoh says, interpret my dream. And what does he say? I can't. Only God can do that. Dreams are in the hands of God. Has anything shifted over 2 years of being forgotten? Nothing. 2 years. Character remains the same. And then you go to Genesis 45 when his brothers have come down and there's a hole. I can't go into the story. Read it for yourselves. That's what these bookmarks are for. If you don't have a bookmark yet, they're on the back table. Please get one and read along. It reads like an amazing story. But what happens is his brothers are in front of him. And in Genesis 45 and verses 5 through 8, listen to what Joseph says. Actually, I'll begin in verse 4. Joseph said to his brothers, come in, come close to me. And when they'd done so, he said this, I am your brother, the one that you sold into slavery into Egypt. And now don't be distressed and don't be angry with yourselves because you sold me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there's been famine, and for the next 5 years there'll not be plowing or reaping, but God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. Verse 8, so then it was not you who sent me here, but it was God. What? God's working while we think he's doing nothing, while we think he's abandoning us, that he's forgotten us, that he's forsaken us. God's doing something. And you might have to sit and wait a long time, but God is doing in ways that we don't get it. I tell you what, time reveals. Time reveals what you really believe. When you're asking God for something and nothing's happening, time proves what's in your heart and what's in your head. What do you actually believe? What time also does is it reveals what you value. Time shows us where we're vulnerable. Time shows up our weaknesses. Time shows up our insecurities. Time loves to show up the areas where we have doubts and we have fears and it doesn't look like it's coming together like I thought it would. Time exposes the areas of our lives that we actually refuse to turn over to God, where we begin to retreat into the security of, no, you know what, God, I will deal with this one. Time has that incredible ability to do it. And time and waiting challenges us to stop relying on ourselves and to actually take God at his word and rely on him even when you don't see the fruits of it immediately. Sure, life would be pleasant It would be more desirable if we didn't just have to go through these time trials. But trust is often developed over time. God may take us to places unknown, uncomfortable, unilluminated, but He says this, trust me. Lamentations 3:24 through 26, Jeremiah writing from one of the deepest places in Israel's history. He says this, the Lord is my portion, and therefore I'll wait for Him. The Lord is good to those who hope in Him, to the one who seeks Him. And therefore it's good to wait patiently for the Lord. That word trust means to run quickly to for refuge. I said that a couple of weeks ago. God says that He will never fail you, He will never leave you, He will never forsake you. You got to wrestle with that and choose whether you're going to trust Him or not. But when it comes to people, there's reality to the fallibility of people as much as there is the infallibility of God. And you see that with Joseph, and I'm going to take just a very short time on this because some people say, ask me, so you're telling me that I should just, trust, that I should just throw myself to people? No, not at all. In fact, Jesus Himself said He did not entrust Himself to humanity because He knew their hearts. Trust people that you can trust. Trust is one of the most fragile things in life because it takes two people, one who has to trust and the other who has to be trustworthy. There's always two parts to trust. God is absolutely trustworthy. He declares it. And He says, now it's up to you. But people, I don't know. But Joseph knows it and he actually shows it. In Genesis 42 and 16, it's very interesting here, just very quickly. It says, when his brothers have come to him and he obviously doesn't trust them. He says, send one of your number to go and get your brother. The rest of you, stay here in prison so that your words might be tested to see if you are telling the truth. He knows that all these years ago, his brothers weren't good for their word. They went home and lied to their dad that some animal tore him up. They lie to him. They're deceivers. And so he comes to this place that he goes, you know what? I'm not just going to trust you. In fact, I'm going to test you to see if anything's changed. And then he ends up keeping one in prison. I wonder if Simeon did something particularly awful. I don't know. But he takes Simeon and he goes, good, you can stay here and you can stay in prison. And the brothers all go home with the food for the family. But then it's funny that the brothers wait till the food's all gone before they go back to get Simeon. But then they bring their little brother. And Joseph does some very interesting things. He tests the brothers with the things that they knew they hated about him. They say this, he knew that they hated him because the father loved him more and lavished things upon him. So what does he do? He serves up a meal but gives five times the amount to the youngest brother. Because I think he wants to see, do they still have that jealousy in them that they're going to react to that? But it says they actually ate in peace. And then he tests them with the cup to the youngest brother, and it's like, are they going to just abandon him like they abandoned me? Are they going to turn for their own self-preservation? But no, they don't. Judas steps up and he goes, don't do that. I'll take the rap. And it's only at that point after they've, and this has been months, when he sees the change, Joseph just opens the floodgates and he weeps. And he's then restored to his family and he realizes that they can start this journey again. For trust to work with humans, it takes a willingness, but it takes character. And if you've had it broken or you've broken trust with someone, realize that it's going to take time for it ever to be restored. Time and effort. Time testing the waters. Time seeing if anything has changed. But restored relationship is worth it because God made that His own priority. If it can be restored, pursue it being restored. To do it, make God your refuge. Then get some godly, wise people around you who give you wise counsel. Realize that words are not enough. Don't just deny the facts. Don't go, oh, they didn't mean it. Oh, it's all okay. No, it's not. Face the reality of stuff and work it through. Trust that God's greater than the experience that you're in. If I'm moving too quickly, it's because I've run out of time, and you can listen to the podcast and you can take notes on it. Free yourself from the idea of punishment, either to you or to the one who offended against you. God is a God of grace and mercy and a God of restoration. Choose to act lovingly. Choose forgiveness and release. Take steps if you can to be restored, but start with small steps. And I want to close tonight with just the simple words to a song. I love the words of this song. It says, turn your eyes upon Jesus and look full in His wonderful face. And the things of this earth, the things of these experiences will grow strangely dim, not just with time, but in the light of His glory and grace. And this morning we closed with that, and there was opportunity to pray for people. And I want to do the same thing tonight. If you're wrestling with this, if you're not sure in your relationship with God how trust works, if you've never entrusted yourself to God, but you're at a point where you realize, man, this whole self-preservation thing's not working so well. My whole self-survival plan, maybe you've never recognize God's authority, and it's time to turn your eyes upon Jesus, who said this, what? Trust in God. Trust also in me. I'll never leave you, never forsake you, never let you down. He'll never forsake those who seek Him. And tonight, if you turn your heart to Jesus and go, I want to seek you, I want to know you, He will never forsake you. Submit yourself to Him. Surrender your life path to Him and ask Him, God, lead me. And wherever I've gone off track, wherever I've abandoned you, forgive me. Please forgive me. God loved us so much that He paid the ultimate sacrifice in His own Son that we could know forgiveness. Maybe you're struggling with trust in relationships. Maybe you're in the middle of the time battle and the time test, and you want someone to just pray with you for strength, for wisdom. Don't just walk out of here. God doesn't hear me better than anyone else. Have someone you know that you're walking through it with pray with you. But if not, I'm happy to pray with you. Someone around you will pray with you. Lauren, Shane, Andrew, Lynette, Geddes, anyone. Just grab us and go, look, would you pray with me? So while we sing this song, if you want prayer, just come out. I'll be here, and that's how we're going to close. So if there are people being prayed with, just allow them the space. Let's not start throwing chairs around yet. But I have an expectation that God's going to meet you in the midst of this. So Lord, in this space, as we just turn our eyes to You, turn our hearts to You, turn our faces toward You. Lord, You know our pain, You know our struggles, You know our independence. And I pray above all things that we would know You who will never forsake us, who will never abandon us. And Lord, if there's things in our lives that need restoring, then please lead us in wisdom where those things can be restored. And God, where we've failed others and we live with guilt, I pray that You would lead us to restoration in those things too. But continue to have Your way in us. Thanks. Amen.